Welcome to the Real Estate Guys radio program and happy summer. You got to put a lot of good ideas and different ideas in your head. Today it is a smorgasbord. We're going to talk about different real estate possibilities for you and a lot of fun stuff. We're at Freedom Fest in Las Vegas, Nevada. I'm your host, Robert Helms.
If you love real estate and have always wanted to own your own business, listen up. The Real Estate Guys and their panel of experts want to teach you how to go full-time fast in the real estate syndication business. These next few years may go down in history as one of the best times ever to acquire investment real estate. There are deals everywhere if you know where to look and how to assemble the resources. The Secrets of Successful Syndication Seminar will show you how to make big money doing big deals from a team of experts that have syndicated projects totaling more than $1 billion. Don't wait for someone to give you a raise or create a job for you. Attend the Secrets of Successful Syndication and learn how to build a team, raise capital, find deals, and make full-time money in 6 months or less. Go to realestateguysradio.com and click on events. All the big players use syndication as a way to diversify risk, optimize profits, and earn big money. You can too. Go to realestateguysradio.com and click on events.
Welcome to the Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helms, in Las Vegas, Nevada, this week at Freedom Fest, which is the largest gathering of free minds in the world, they claim. Joining me, as usual, our co-host, financial strategist, Russell Gray.
Hey, Robert.
This is our sixth year at Freedom Fest, and we go to different conferences, and there's very few we go to every year. But 6 years ago, we came to this thing and went, whoa, because of the very unique aspects of this conference, and we've been mainstay fixture ever since.
Yeah, well, you know, in our business, we're out there always looking for ideas. We're looking to build relationships with people who have products and services that would be of interest to our listeners. And we're always looking for ways to understand better the big picture, what's going on, how it affects investments. This conference really surprised us because it was highly educational, you know, really gave us more clarity in understanding the two big schools of economic thought and theory as we were going through that process of really wanting to understand economics. Remember the August in Economy series we did, I think, a few years back. And it was really instructive to understand that. It kind of opened the doors to exploring things like precious metals and oil and gas and even farmland and offshore investing, which we were already involved in, but it kind of took it to another level. And understanding things like international asset protection, a lot of these things came from people that we met at these conferences. So that part of it has been super beneficial. And of course, just immersing yourself in the content itself. So it's not just the networking and who you're meeting and what you're learning, but it's a process of being in an environment for several days where it's very focused. And of course, above all, as far as the audience is concerned, getting a chance to bring you some of the biggest names we've had on the show, we've met through Freedom Fest, but also we've met some people that you would never, ever have a chance to meet, but they end up getting put on stage for one reason or another, or we interact with them in their booth or at a breakout session, or sometimes just people we happen to meet in casual conversation through networking. And we find somebody that has a really interesting story, somebody that has an angle or a lesson that we think the listeners would benefit from. So today we have a little bit of all of that for you, and you're really going to enjoy it.
This was the biggest Freedom Fest yet in terms of number of attendees. Well over 2,000 people attended, and some great folks. There were 6 billionaires here. Most of whom we got to meet or spend time with, which is extraordinary, right? Jim Rohn used to say, you know, those of us in the Millionaires Club, we like to bring a billionaire in every now and then because he'll say, well, you guys are doing pretty good, but, you know, come on, step it up, right? We become the sum total of the 5 people we spend the most time with. So choose wisely. This event sometimes could be labeled political in some ways because it's libertarian, not like political party libertarian, but the freedom movement, liberty movement, which is great to get your mind around, see what those people are thinking. But at the same time, what we love about Freedom Fest is they do lots of debates. One of the biggest debates drew a huge crowd.
Yeah, I mean, this room held probably just over 3,000 people, and it was packed to the gills with people along the walls. Well, what were they in there for? Steve Moore, economist, formerly from the Wall Street Journal, kind of a supply side guy, the Ronald Reagan school of thought with respect to economics. And then on the other side of the debate issue was Paul Krugman. Now, Paul Krugman is the Nobel Prize winning economist columnist for the New York Times and probably one of the most quoted Keynesians out there. And so clearly not in the libertarian side of things, not in the conservative side of things. He's very much about big government spending. He's pro-Fed. On a personal note, probably not exactly my personal cup of tea, but you know what? I was really glad he was there because I wanted to hear what he had to say. And one of the things that really stood out to me, because this is like right in my wheelhouse, right? So I'm sitting here listening to these guys go back and forth, and two things stood out. One is I felt like they missed some things that were really important, which was like, who am I, right? I'm just some schmuck sitting in the audience with my you know, self-made economic education here that I get a chance to test and because of what we do and who we network with my own ideas about things. But also just watching how people who the audience was largely, I would have thought, would have been a lot more on the right of center side of things, a lot more Austrian versus Keynesian, a lot more small government, a lot more libertarian than big government and regulation and intervention. And yet Krugman actually won some people over to his school of thought and made some excellent points, I thought.
Yeah, it was great. And that's, again, it's a mental exercise. But one of the things that Mark Skousen, the founder of Freedom Fest, and you've heard him on our show before, often says is that you have to listen to both sides and you have to do so respectfully. Don't be waiting to get your opinion out there. Robert Kiyosaki says the same thing. When you read a book, listen to what their point of view is before you layer yours on it. So this is a great exercise for us every year to listen to different ideas, new ideas, some of which we might not think are that great. I mean, one of the guys asked a question that was about taxes. And of course, if you heard our show last week, you heard Grover Norquist and Steve Forbes talking about taxes, both gentlemen we met at Freedom Fest and were able to interview. But one of the guys in the audience asked, well, rather than income tax or consumption tax, couldn't we just tax property more? So here I am trying to keep an open mind, and I reach over to my dad. I go, who's that idiot? Right? What do you mean? Why should only private owners of land pay that? And then I went, whoa, wait a minute. I need to back up and listen to what this guy has to say. So a lot of different ideas. Patrick Byrne was there. He's the CEO of Overstock.com. Really, really interesting guy working on crypto technologies beyond Bitcoin. Alan West, former congressman, really articulate guy. We spent an evening and one of the very best presentations I've ever seen. Not in any particular arena or style, but just across the board. I've seen a lot of presentations. I do a lot of presentations. One of the very best presentations I've ever seen. Glenn Beck.
Yeah, Glenn Beck. Now, here's Glenn Beck, probably one of the more polarizing figures that came out. Yet, you know, if you're there and you're studying how people communicate, say what you want, but he built a huge following, a huge audience. He's created several huge movements that have attracted millions of people. And so you have to ask yourself, what is it about the way this guy communicates that he is able to touch the heart and engage the mind so effectively?
Yeah, it was amazing, amazing stuff. Marco Rubio was there, right? So another presidential candidate, Senator Mike Lee. We heard from Steve Wynn.
Yes, we did.
Steve Wynn, right? One of the premier business guys in Vegas, and he was amazing. They filmed the John Stossel show live, and Steve Wynn was one of the guests, as was John Mackey. John Mackey, the CEO of Whole Foods, really interesting guy, vegan. I went into a session talking about diet with the author, Dr. Campbell, of The China Study, and John Mackey talking about his vegan diet. Amazing stuff. Peter Thiel, billionaire, amazing founder of PayPal, one of the co-founders of PayPal. He was the first outside investor in Facebook. He wrote an amazing book called Zero to One. Had a chance to see Peter a couple of times. Donald Trump, of course, was there. Amazing event. So our job today is to share what we were able to find relating to real estate. So often we are looking at a bigger picture. Bigger picture economics is important. It's why we study gold and silver. It's why we study oil and gas. It's why we look at bonds and understand the stock market. But we're real estate guys, but we're investors first. So we had a great opportunity to find some real estate nuggets. And so when we come back, you're going to meet some really cool people that are doing some cool stuff in real estate today on the Real Estate Guys radio program.
Live nationwide, you're listening to The Real Estate Guys. Find out more at realestateguysradio.com.
Are you achieving everything you want in life? What if there was a time-tested way for you to get everything you've dreamed of? The most successful people in life set goals and keep themselves accountable. But how? The good news is that it's not rocket science. You too can learn the skills and unleash the motivation that will create success in your life. And now is the time. Hi, this is Robert Helms, and I'd like to personally invite you to attend Creating Your Future, the 2016 Goals Retreat, taking place January 8th through 10th in beautiful San Diego, California. This unique weekend has been called phenomenal, inspirational, and life-changing by the hundreds of people that have attended. Find out more at realestateguysradio.com and click events or call 888-489-7723, extension 18. Get your life back on track physically, spiritually, and financially. Attend the 2016 Goals Retreat on the second weekend of the new year. Click events at realestateguysradio.com and register why there's still early bird pricing. This is no dress rehearsal. Live the life you were meant to. Visit realestateguysradio.com or call 888-489-7723 today.
Hello, Robert Kiyosaki. Listen to the Real Estate Guys. They're wild and crazy, but they really know what they're talking about.
Welcome back to the Real Estate Guys radio program. Las Vegas, Nevada at Freedom Fest. Let's say hello to Lily Williams. Hi, Lily.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Well, we heard you the very first day, and your story is quite inspiring. So here you are from China, and you've landed here in the U.S., but very strategically. So tell us about how all that happened.
Well, China still had no freedom. So when I was about 24 years old, I decided, hey, to pursue my dream to have freedom and prosperity, I probably need to come to the United States of America.
Yeah.
And it was a long journey, but I made it. That was right before my 24th birthday. I came here in debt. I borrowed $100 from friends, and that's all I had in my pocket. I owe my professor who helped me to go to University of Texas $1,200 U.S. debt, and I barely spoke English. But I was determined to achieve American dream. And this Freedom Fest is about American dream.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that I'm here.
Absolutely. Well, I would imagine most of the people you were around didn't feel the same way.
Yes, I think, it's encouraging to see people one way or another. They just desire for freedom and the freedom to pursue life, freedom to become rich, and freedom to pursue whatever dreams you desire to have. And I feel encouraged after I come here, see so many young people here. And that's what I'm worried about, because I don't want this country becomes like China again. China even has become more economically free, but it's not politically. So people are rich, have money. So when I become a real estate investor 2008 after housing crash, I wanted to encourage my Chinese friends come here, buy real estate. They don't have to live in there. They can just buy as investment. But then people were not so sure, and nobody came to buy anything. So I said, well, I guess I will just do it without you guys. And so my husband and I purchased 8 residential properties, 2 in Las Vegas, actually.
All right.
And we have been blessed, and so far, we're doing well.
Now, first of all, great timing, right? And the crash, you think about, well, things are on sale, and they were. How is it that you figured out real estate investment, all that, since that's not really a part of what most Chinese do, is they don't invest in investment property too much. So how is it that you figured all that out and decided it would be something you wanted to do?
I have to give credit to this book called Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Many years ago, before the crash, I read that book. I could not put down. I read it just maybe in 2 or 3 hours, could not put down. It just resonated with me what he said. Because my husband's family are very intellectual, they're not PhDs in the family. They always emphasize on good education, that you get a job, that you climb your ladder. I was never really impressed with that, because I said, what if I climb the ladder and then I change my mind, I don't like it. I don't like work for this boss, for this company. So my dream is always to be self-employed. I did start my company in 2000 when I got laid off by a corporate American telecom company. But my self-business did not do very well. I mean, it's like they all, just a little bit money here, ad hoc project, like a consultant for Chinese companies, American companies. I was trained as lawyer in China. And in Denver, I just didn't do very well. So, but the poor dad, rich dad put this real estate investment property concept in my head. So once I saw housing crash, foreclosures every day, I convinced my husband, let's use our house, primary home as collateral, take all the equity out to buy rental properties. I had to do lots of persuading, because he's conservative, German, English, Welsh blood, even though he was born in this country, but I am a more entrepreneur. So I said, let's take a risk, since I come to this country with nothing anyway, right? So I wanted to do it, and he finally named me to do it, and we actually did well. We just bought one, fix up, rent one, take money out, buy another one. And it was the first year we had no weekends at all. I would be cleaning lady, he would be handyman.
Yeah.
And we hired our kids to paint our first house. It was It was quite an experience.
And so now here you are, and it looks like you did the right thing at the right time, and you're continuing to build your business and build your real estate empire.
Right. You know, like I told you, the original principle we took out of our house, and after slow boning, buying houses and refinancing, we still have their money. So now we're looking for next opportunity. What else should we invest in? Well, commercial, residential, or maybe even the other precious metals. I think that as an investor, you have to always look for next best opportunity. It doesn't matter what it is. Everything has a cycle, right? But the sense that you have to be ready, you have to have a game plan, and you also have to have discipline. We could go out, blow all their money, you know, that just have fun, have vacation. I told my children, you're on your own for lots of things, because we want to train you to be very disciplined financially and also to be savvy investors. Cannot blow money on your personal pleasure, because that money is gone. You have not built your assets. You have not built up your net worth. So as a Chinese mother, I teach my kids that, you know, you got to manage money. I don't understand why our public school do not teach our children how to manage money and how to even start your own company as an entrepreneur. Maybe you guys who have radio can teach them more.
Well, that's a big part of our mission, education for effective action, we say.
Right.
So, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. Incredibly inspirational. And I guess the thing is, what would you say? Is the American dream still alive and well?
I think so, but it's at a risk. That's why we got to work so hard to be united as grassroots level to keep this country free. Because if we have a bigger and super powerful government and just printing more money, getting us into debt and deficit, I am worried that the same American dream I come here to pursue might not be there for my children and grandchildren.
Right.
And China is still under one-party dictatorship, so they cannot go back. I cannot go back there either. So we have to fight here now.
All right. Well, we sure appreciate your enthusiasm, and thanks for sharing your story with us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
Bye.
You're tuned to the Real Estate Guys radio program. More when we come back from Freedom Fest in Las Vegas. I'm your host, Robert Helms.
Real estate investment advice right in your mailbox. Sign up for the free Real Estate Guys newsletter at realestateguysradio.com.
Hello, Real Estate Guys listeners. This is Ken Corsini with Georgia Residential Partners. I want to talk to you for a minute about a handful of properties that we are selling right now in Metro Atlanta for less than $30,000. That's right. These are houses that we bought and have already fixed and have placed tenants in these properties, and we are now selling them for less than $30,000. These are properties that are not in the hood. They are not bad areas, and we've got a very high demand for tenants in this location. And right now we are selling these things for less than $30,000. Most of these properties are getting between $500 and $600 in rent per month, so your ROI is through the roof. On top of that, if you have interest, we would owner finance you on these deals as well. Call me today, 770-924-5450, or email me at ken@gainvesting.com.
When the housing market crashed in 2008, San Antonio led the way in appreciation and cash flow. Would you like to have a strong, reliable investment that performs in both up and down markets? Cash flow is the key to successful investing, and we have tons of positive cash flow properties for our ATW investors. Come see why the Milken Institute rated San Antonio the number one economy in the United States, and why San Antonio is the only major city in the country to have a AAA bond rating. ATW Investments can teach you strategies for building strong, secure wealth with investments starting at $5,000. ATW's patented, proven, and powerful system will do all the hard work for you. ATW is where the perfect market meets the perfect strategy and produces the perfect results in your portfolio. To get started, go to the resource section of the Real Estate Guys website or email us at contact@atw-investments.com.
Hi, this is Lawrence Yun, Chief Economist with National Association of Realtors, and you are listening to the Real Estate Guys.
Welcome back to the Real Estate Guys radio program in Las Vegas, Nevada at Freedom Fest. And you never know who you're going to run into, but we just have sat down and met with Craig Cawley. I want to introduce you guys to Craig. Hi, Craig. How are you?
I'm doing great, Robert. How are you doing?
I'm great. Good to meet you. Hey, you know, we've got a lot of listeners that look at lots of different types of real estate, and you have a really unique type of real estate. Tell us about Precious Timber.
Yes, we do. At Precious Timber, we have have a real estate offering where you own the land, you own the timber, you have a choice of what you want to plant. We advise you on that and try and give you some recommendations. And we manage the process. We grow the timber for you. But it's land that you own and solely in your name, a fee simple deeded title on the land. As the timber grows, the land and the timber becomes more valuable, and the bigger it gets, the more it's worth, and we grow it until harvest time, and which is determined by the arrangements that we decide to, that work best for you. And that's pretty simple. You know, no matter what happens, trees grow. No matter what the stock market does. The other day when the stock market closed down for 3 or 4 hours for whatever reason that was.
Right.
Which we don't know. We don't have to say that, but guess what the trees did?
Kept growing. Well, here's what's neat, right? You own the land.
Yep.
And yet you don't have to do anything with the trees. So talk about how you guys go in and handle that part of the equation.
Yeah, what we do, we have our own grow houses, so we start from the saplings, we nurture them until they're ready to put in the ground. We actually guarantee the growth of the trees for the first 2 years because that's the most vulnerable time. Once they take hold, then the funguses and the bugs and things that are biggest enemies of new trees are pretty much under control because the bark starts developing and so on. And the irrigation of them and the surveillance of the properties is 24/7 as well. Our plantation workers there's somebody on site all the time. And we have really families of people in the region that help us do this. One of our owners of the company actually lives in Nicaragua, been there for that's where we're located in Nicaragua in Central America. And has lived there for 14 years. So we are vested in the country, been there. I've also been involved in the projects for, over 15 years. I have land down there myself. So I'm kind of a client before, the role that I have now.
Well, one of the things about Nicaragua, of course, is that, the climate there is very conducive for fast growth. I imagine that's probably why you picked that market.
The stars are aligning in this one because we have the 19th largest lake in the world right next door. So we have ample water, although we also have 300 inches of rain on an average basis. We have 85 to 95 degree weather year round. We have volcanic soil. I mean, everything is the perfect spot to do this. It just happens to be in Central America. We've just kind of stumbled across it by almost an accident, but it's turned out to be a tremendous opportunity financially.
All right. Now, I haven't been there yet, but I'm going to assume that when we talk about buying a piece of property, it's contiguous with other folks who are doing the same thing. So this is a large scale area, but the investors who put the money in, they own real estate in their own account, however
right.
they want to do that.
Right.
I imagine they can do that in IRA or with cash or whatever they want
to
do.
Exactly.
And then they're participating in the harvest of the timber. What is the timeline for that? Are you planting these trees from day one, or what is the expected timeline?
The typical scenarios is they're planted from day one and has a 8 to 12 to 15 to 18 year grow period. And you can choose to cut them down anytime you want, but ideally we want the tree to be 18 inches across, 24 feet high, and that can range anywhere between 15 and 18 years. So it's a patient wait. This isn't a thing you turn around real quick, because the value is the bigger the tree, the more it's worth. And the world demand for it is increasing every year. And also, it's really important is that our focus is on people, planet, and profit in that order. We've put to work hundreds and hundreds of people who did not have any advantage in their life at all when it came to a situation like this. But this is run by an American company with American people that know how to operate business. It just happens to be in that region. Second thing, environmentally, this was a country that was devastated by deforestation. And we are replanting, we are reforesting, and every tree that we grow is registered. Every tree has a number. And as a potential opportunity for our clients, they have a log of all of that information. And what they purchase, they are guaranteed to grow. If something happens in the first 2 years, we replace it, we monitor it. That is our business model, and that's what they seem to love, and we do too. We have large plantations, and we only have small sections that we parcel out on an annual basis for potential clients that want to be involved as well.
So let's talk about that part. What is the general size of an area that someone purchases?
Well, so let's just say for $100,000, you get 5 acres, 1,880 trees, and over a period of 18 to 15 to 18 years, those trees will be worth about $460 on the current, on today's market. We don't know what that's going to look like, but most products increase in value in time. Also, your land is going to increase in value instantly once the trees are planted, because the longer the tree is in the ground, the more mature it is, the more valuable your resource is, and your real estate in this case.
Now, neither you or I are investment advisors, and this is just an idea for you to consider, but this is different than investing in a company that is a lumber company. It's not that type of an investment. No. This is where you own the real estate, which is what we love about the idea. It's also not a monthly cash flow kind of arrangement. It's a place I can go park some money outside of my country if I don't live in Nicaragua. I have listeners in 180 countries. So if you're from Nicaragua, here's an investment in your backyard. Anywhere else, then this is a way to diversify where you're investing.
We always recommend that.
And you own the property.
You own the property. This isn't something you want to pour everything into, nor should you do that with anything, really.
Right.
So this is a perfect place because the quality of life is improved for the people there, and you are a part of that process. Your money is being put to work in multiple ways, not just for profit. You're actually doing something. You're creating generational wealth. I mean, I wish I was going to be around for two or three harvest cycles. I'm not. So my plan with what I have there is that's going to my children and my grandchildren and so on. So it's a legacy as well. So it gives you the ability to, I don't know, kind of put your time stamp on the world that you were actually here and you did something good for the world and other people that you may not have never even met.
And so the process is pretty simple. People figure out, hey, this is something I'm interested in. Is it a specific parcel? Do you look on a map, or are essentially all the parcels similar?
The parcels, they're similar, yet they're different based upon the terrain that's available. And some areas are flatter than others, but a lot of people say, well, mine's not flat, you know, but that's actually to your advantage, because one of the things we don't want to have is water puddling up if possible, if we get too much rain. So on a slope is actually just as important to have uneven land when you grow trees as even land. And it's really determined by what our foresters recommend on an annual basis, where these plots should be divided up and an easement so you have access to your land. You own it. You have to be able to get to it. So we make sure that that happens. Even though it's located within our plantations, the private ownership has the ability to get to it, but it's managed by the entire process. The same things that we do with our corporate areas, we do with yours, all managed by the same people.
Now, what about future expansion? Say somebody decides that, I've got enough money to buy a few acres now, but 5 years from now, I might want to buy again. They're buying in a different area, but also that may be a way to sort of ladder the timeline of this product.
Right. And currently we have five different plantations, but okay. We have a lot of land we have not developed yet, because when the company went and they bought a lot of land for a different purpose, honestly. And it just turns out that the agricultural aspects were more profitable. In most ways, a lot easier. And we just love what we do from the biological aspect of it, that these things grow 6 to 8% every year, no matter what the banks, stocks, politics, they don't care. They just grow.
All right. Well, there's lots of different ways to get involved with real estate, and perhaps not only agriculture, but timber could be something for you to consider. If you want more information, Craig's put together some great information for you. All you have to do is send us an email to timber@realestateguysradio.com, timber@realestateguysradio.com, and you'll be able to get in touch with Craig. Craig, thanks so much for your time.
Thank
today.
You, Robert. I had a blast. Thank you.
Great stuff. We'll look forward to seeing you down in Nicaragua.
All right.
You're tuned to the Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helms.
Need help with your real estate investment portfolio? Check out the resources page at realestateguysradio.com.
Are you ready to profit in paradise? Hi, it's Robert Helms. And if you think real estate investing means tenants, toilets, and termites, think again. Located just a short plane ride from the U.S., a virtually untouched paradise awaits. The beautiful country of Belize. When you go to Belize with the Real Estate Guys, you'll spend four fabulous days discovering one of the most intriguing real estate markets I've ever seen. With its jungle rainforests, pristine beaches, and 81-degree turquoise water, Belize is one of the most beautiful places on Earth. Plus, it's considered one of the top seven tax havens in the world. Belize property is on the rise, and many experts think the best is yet to come. But don't just take my word for it. Come experience Belize firsthand at our upcoming investor field trip. When you join us, you'll discover the many reasons we love Belize, like tremendously undervalued beachfront land, super low taxes, ease of doing business, and so much more. Get the details at realestateguysradio.com. Just click on events. See paradise for yourself. Click events at realestateguysradio.com, and I'll see you in beautiful Belize.
Hi, this is Donald Trump, and you're listening to The Real Estate Guys.
Welcome back to The Real Estate Guys radio program, the number one downloaded podcast on real estate investing. We're always looking for interesting uses of real estate, and what we're about to share with you is something I don't think we've talked about before, other than the little bits and pieces, and I've got two distinguished guests with me, so let's say hello to Mr. Shankar Singham. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you, and good to be here.
Good to have you here, and also Eric Brimmon.
Yes, thanks.
So let's talk about this. You guys are working on a really interesting idea here, and it's not necessarily a new idea, but Shankar, you have some experience in this. First of all, I guess your background being from Babson College and what you do there. Tell us about how you got involved.
My background is as a lawyer and economist, and I was with a bunch of big global law firms, and I had a very very privileged in my career because it began with the privatization of the UK electricity industry in the Thatcher years in Britain. And then we moved in 1989, post the wall, Berlin Wall coming down, to work on the transitions in the former Soviet economies. And we then moved in 1992 to the Apertura in Latin America. So we worked on transitions in major markets that are transitioned from either communism or some form of import substitution into market capitalism. And we learned in that 25-year period a lot of very important lessons about how to make it work. How do you actually grow an economy? How do you generate economic activity? How do you create jobs and prosperity and all these good things? So we essentially took the lessons that we'd learned, and you know, I had developed this set of skills and experiences, and really unique experiences. And when I joined Babson Global, we're with the Competitiveness and Enterprise Cities project, which is being incubated at Babson Global, which is the international venture arm of Babson College, which is the number one entrepreneurship school. So this idea of creating economic activity and generating jobs and generating business activity is very tied to unleashing the entrepreneurial spirit. And so it was a sort of natural fit. And I realized that if I didn't do this with this knowledge and with these experiences now, that the train was leaving the station and I wasn't, you know, going to be on the train. So it was not a difficult choice to do it. In terms of the lead up to how the project became realized, it was really understanding that despite the enormous progress of the last 25 years, economies are, you know, after 2004 and 2005, economic growth was stalled. Jobs were not being created. Regulatory systems were declining. Around the world, this is developing countries and developed markets. You know, we'd seen enormous growth after the Second World War. We'd seen tenfold increase in global GDP in 50 years. We were really, it was really stagnant and has been stagnant for the last 10 or 15 years, actually. And so we recognized that one of the problems was lack of forward movement on reform. So the question became, how do you do this? How do you actually get countries to have open trading systems, pro-competitive regulation, and property rights protection, the three pillars that give you economic activity. How can you do it? And we've done a good job on open trade and a good job on property rights, but competition behind the border was a disaster. So we created crony capitalism, oligarchy in Russia, you know, with a vested interest, rent-seeking elites in Latin America that prevented economic growth. So we took this idea, and realizing it was almost impossible to do at a national level, we did the next best thing, which is, can you create an alternative delivery mechanism? Can you take a zone, a city, a piece of land, and put economic activity on it if you only had the right regulatory system? And could you do this in places, in developing countries and emerging markets, where none of that was present in the rest of the country's laws? That's essentially the model that we used. We went to the 60 or 70 governments we'd worked with around the world in the last 25 years. We found a great deal of receptivity to the idea. They know what they have to do. They know that their backs are against the wall in terms of generating jobs. They're a very, you know, unemployed youth demographic. So the issue was, could you take the impetus that a government had, take the mega trend of urbanization, where you've got billions of people moving into cities, cities being created all over the world, hundreds of cities being created all over the world. Could you take that and turn that into the kind of environment so that you could create a sort of mini Hong Kong in a developing emerging market? Economic activity generator for the country massively increases productivity by thousands of percent. Therefore, massively increases the value of the land on which the project is being built. And can you do this? And then it becomes a demonstration model that the rest of the country can, if they choose to do so, that they can adapt. But even if they don't choose to do it, you've created a generator of economic activity. So that's really the concept that we have.
Well, it's a brilliant idea, because if you think about even the politics involved in trying to get any kind of reform at a country level, even if you have someone receptive, doesn't mean everyone's receptive, but the testing ground of saying we could take a small part and see if it works. And we've seen enterprise zones and things, right, in different areas, and low taxation and abatement and those kinds of things that have actually worked. So from reception to implementation, what's that been looking like?
Well, so we've started the negotiation process with about 15 countries right now. So the way we build the project is we want to make it very easy for governments to engage with this. And you talked about, you know, some of the free trade zones and special economic zones and those kinds of things that exist in the world. So it's not a new concept to a government to have a zone that has this kind of, you know, regulatory system.
A special treatment, if you will, of some kind for that.
That's right. That's not unusual. But generally what it's been in the past, it's been tax driven. It's been, you know, tax breaks, tax incentives.
Right.
So that's not particularly sustainable. What you want, actually, is to remove the barriers to economic growth in the country. So the first step that we do with the government is to identify, well, what are those economic barriers to growth that you have? What are the solutions? And then we use a economic model that we've developed, a productivity simulator, to show them what is the economic growth that could occur, that could be unleashed if they actually do this. So, you know, you can look at an airport hub and you can say, you know, if you do the following things, if you grant more air freedoms, if you remove the anti-competitive way that slots, landing slots, are allocated, you could have a $1.2 billion air hub. If you don't do those things, then you might have a $200 million air hub. So you choose, you know, but you need to understand that if you choose not to do the big changes, then you're leaving $1 billion on the table. And that may be a good choice, it may be a bad choice. We allow the government, you know, to sort of make that choice. And then we take those things that need to be changed, that we agree can be changed, and we create a regulatory framework agreement for the zone. We do that in about 6 to 9 months. It's not a long process. We don't want it to be a long 5-year process.
Right.
We essentially tell the government, look, we know what it should look like. It's really up to you to determine how much of it you think you can be comfortable with. So we want to decide that within 6 months. And if we're not there, if we're far away in 6 months, fine, then nobody really loses anything. But if we are there and we can put the regulatory framework in place, then that becomes automatically your investor proposition. But the mere signing of the regulatory framework from a land perspective automatically revalues the land that you're on, because now suddenly people see that there's a potential for a significant amount of growth. And the land value itself is very low to start with.
Now, I would think that what you would need is a fairly substantial amount of land. You're not going to go buy 5 acres. I mean, this is probably right. A pretty substantial amount. And the countries that you're talking about are places that have land readily available?
Yeah, so the size varies a lot. I mean, you don't need a huge amount of land in order to create an economic activity generator. So one of the biggest, if not perhaps the biggest, economic activity generators in the world is the square mile of the City of London, the financial district, not the
right.
City of London, but the square mile, the financial district. So
yep.
In one square mile, you can do a lot. So the issue is not, you know, we don't need to have, you know, 200 square miles of land. You can do this on an industrial zone at that kind of scale, where you might have 3 or 4 square kilometers. You could do it 10 square kilometers. In some of the countries that have a lot of land and that are engaged with us in these projects, they're much bigger. They're more like the 100 square miles kind of size. But it largely depends on who the partner is. I mean, we work with local developers, we work with landowners, and we work sometimes with where the government provides a concession on the land.
So let's say that the government's all for this and you guys are able to work out an arrangement. Then, of course, you've got to find the land, and I'm sure it takes capital to do that. And, Eric, that's where you come in. So tell us how you got involved with this.
Sure. Thank you. Well, first of all, I went to Babson, so I'm a Babson alum, graduated in 2006. And when I started my career, I did the typical investment banking consulting route, paying off student loans. Eventually, I did what I wanted to do, which was to be an entrepreneur, and started a couple of businesses. Some of them failed, but eventually a couple started to succeed. And in 2013, I sold the first one. And when I met Shankar, after finding out that, you know, Babson was involved with this initiative. I was at that stage during the transition period, the 1 year typical transition period, where I was still involved in the company that had bought mine. But I was very much thinking about what I was going to do next, you know, and what was in the future. And it resuscitated what I had been while at Babson thinking. And it's interesting, these ideas, Shankar's enterprise city approach, you know, I had been thinking about it from a different angle, but very similar in nature. How can we create this new and special zone in the world where free market anchored principles can flourish for wealth creation, poverty alleviation, etc.? So after meeting Shankar, I just knew I needed to be involved somehow. And it wasn't quite clear initially how that was going to happen. But in understanding exactly what you said, that at some point to take this to the next level, you're going to need the capital, but not the institutional level capital that eventually will come in, but after the project is set up, but the seed stage capital.
Sure.
And of course, having been an entrepreneur dealing in venture capital, angel investing, I knew exactly what the risk profile of those types of investments were. And I understood why it was a very different proposition to come in at that stage than afterwards when there's already a master plan and a rezoning event. So we created New Way Capital for that. In fact, you know, that was what inspired me to create New Way Capital initially. And you know, since then, New Way Capital has expanded into also New Way Ventures and now New Way Cities. Our role is very much to provide that capital early on in the process, right before the rezoning event or the RFA being signed. We package it in a way that is compatible with the large-scale real estate developers, and then we can speak their language, they can deal with a professional counterpart as opposed to a bunch of small landowners that makes the process just that much more complicated. So our investors tend to really benefit from that significant appreciation in land value just by having the RFA signed, not necessarily for the long-term appreciation of the overall city, but rather just that short-term exposure.
So, Shankar, I would imagine one of the time-consuming parts has to be working with the countries, because obviously once you've got that cleared and Eric goes to work, that part's going to be pretty quick. What are the obstacles? What are the challenges or the things that the people you're talking to are concerned about when considering something like an enterprise city?
Well, you know, not every country in the world is in a position to do this, you know, with us. We look for countries primarily in the emerging markets and developing world, which is, let's face it, most of the countries in the world. We're looking for countries that recognize that economic activity is stalled, that recognize that frankly have a sense of urgency about solving this problem. Many of the countries we're working with have very, very high youth unemployment demographics, and it's getting worse. And in some of those countries, that youth demographic is exposed to, you know, other ideologies that are very dangerous to not only those countries, but also to us. So these are countries that recognize that they have to do something. They've also recognized that the reform they've tried to put in place has failed. And they recognize why that is the case. They recognize that that's because it's a highly crony capitalist kind of environment, very difficult to push through reform. So if you get that constellation of factors in a particular country, then that becomes a country that's willing to talk to us. So the way we do this is we work with countries, we sign a MOU or a letter of intent with them that simply says, it doesn't commit them to the whole project, it simply commits them to the next stage, which is to study the possibility of this with us, to look at whether it is feasible to create some kind of zone in their country, but recognizing it's going to be regulatory autonomy, it's going to be a different kind of system from the host country environment, and it's not just going to be tax. If they understand that, then we can go to the next stage. And what we're finding is that a lot of countries are more than anxious to, you know, to get to do that with us and to get to the next stage.
Well, I would think from the employment part for sure, you see a lot of the brain drain that happens in these countries where people think the better opportunity is outside of their country and they leave for better opportunity, which again is part of that world dream, we'll call it, right? That I don't have I'm not limited by where I'm born necessarily. But at the same time, we want to chase opportunity. Let's talk about the folks that you envision coming into an enterprise city and who's that going to attract? What kinds of businesses? What kind of companies?
Well, that's a good question. That it's very dependent on where the country is, what the city is, what the government agrees to do. I mean, we could create a great air hub in a place, but if the government doesn't agree to do any of the things we need in aviation, we're not going to be doing that.
Right.
So we don't really know the answer to that at the very beginning of this process. See, one of the problems, new cities are being developed all over the world, you know, 500 in China or 100 in India. Hundreds of cities are being developed all over the world. And generally the way that it works is the way it's worked in the past has been the government decides they want to have a city in place X. They decide exactly what the city's going to be. It's going to be a media zone. It's going to be a financial services hub, whatever it's going to be. The government then builds it, including the infrastructure. And the private sector is basically a tenant. And this method of doing it has never really worked. And no city has actually developed that way anyway.
Right.
Cities don't develop that way. Cities develop because people see opportunities. Individual entrepreneurs, individual business people see opportunities and they say, right, I can do this. We are the last people to tell, you know, other business people what they can do in their businesses in this place.
Right.
That's not our job. Our job is to create the operating system, is to create the environment. And that depends on the government in terms of what they allow us to actually do and what the regulatory framework actually looks like. But our job is to create that system, that operating system, where private sector can build the city. The private sector can actually create the infrastructure of the place. And the private sector will do that if there's a return, if there aren't distortions that prevent them from having a return. There are plenty of companies that can do roads and railroads and water and you name it, to create that first level of infrastructure, if we have created a regulatory framework that frees them from the distortions that they face in markets around the world generally. I mean, 90% of global capital goes only to 12 countries. So why doesn't it go to countries in the developing world which have much higher returns because of these distortions and because of these barriers? So we think if we eliminate those barriers, then we're going to create an environment where lots of people will come in. So we have two jobs, actually. We have the job of creating the operating system, and then we have the job of telling global capital, telling the world that it exists. And we also must show that the host government is not likely to interfere with it, which is a big challenge that we have in our negotiation with the government. But if we can do those three things, then capital will flow. There is $30 trillion of capital on the sidelines now. There is more cash in the world available than at any time in human history. There is more demand for infrastructure need than at any time in human history. Why are they not coming together? They're not coming together because that capital doesn't trust the environment in the countries where it is needed. What we do is we're a bridge. We're a bridge between those two things. And if we're successful, if the governments sort of partner with us, you know, properly, then that bridge will occur and these two things will come together.
Let's talk about the last one, which is a great one. What are you asking from a country in terms of a long-term commitment? Because if I'm seeking not just capital, but businesses to come in, they're looking for that certainty that they don't have otherwise. So is it for a particular period of time? Is it indefinitely? What are you asking the government to do or to give up, I guess?
Well, again, it depends on whether it's a concession of land. It might be a 99-year concession of land. If it's actually private land, then this is intended to be forever, obviously. We think actually what's going to happen is a little bit like what happened in Hong Kong and southern China. You know, there was a view when we were coming up to the handover in Hong Kong, lots of people were leaving, it was great fear what the Chinese were going to do in Hong Kong. And what actually happened was it was more a case of Hong Kong taking over the southern China than the other way around.
Right.
You know, if you look at the special economic zones in Shenzhen and others, they look like Hong Kong a little bit, and they certainly don't look like the rest of mainland China. You know, I think that that's basically our goal. Our goal is to create that kind of environment where people will trust it and therefore invest.
So let's talk about the investment side then, Eric. Today, where you guys sit, you're in conversations with multiple countries. Obviously, you're going to have to go out and acquire land, and you've already made some inroads into that. Tell us what the plan looks like to go out and create the next step of this happening.
Sure. There's various stages, obviously, and we want to do this progressively against milestones for how we're going to deploy capital. The first use of capital is to go ahead and carry out the due diligence over the target land to make sure that from an investor point of view, and do realize that New Way and Babson Global and Shankar's Enterprise, they're separate, right? So we have a fiduciary duty to the investors who contribute to do the proper due diligence to make sure that even though Shankar and his team are doing the best efforts, that we believe also that the opportunity is there
Sure, there's a safety mechanism for investors.
Well, it's it's an additional set of eyes looking at it from a venture capitalist point of view to make sure that everything that needs to be in place is there, including the legal contracts and everything else. That initial tranche of capital will go to finance those efforts and to start to put in place the type of contractual optionality to acquire the land as soon as we see enough progress in the conversations with the government to almost assure us that once we activate the larger checks to acquire property, that the rest of the process is going to go forward. So the first tranche goes to that, soft infrastructure, legal infrastructure. The second tranche goes to actually make the first set of acquisitions, which is intended not to be the complete land, but, you know, the prime locations that we think are best positioned to be developed first and therefore to provide that exit point that Shankar was talking about early on in the process. So we break it up into tranches, and that's and the time frame here can be relatively short term, because by the time we get involved, Shankar's already been working with his team to get the conversations going, and the time it takes to exit is just a matter of the time it takes to position this for the later stage capital to come in, and that can be 2 years.
So if an investor invests early on, they're investing in this whole concept and idea and the work you've just talked about, then is the plan that different investors would fund different locations, or is it part of one fund that is looking for multiple locations?
Well, both. We're doing a one fund right now because it's going to go to the first investable opportunity.
Okay.
But they're going to be exposed to a very specific set of land, right, that passes our due diligence process. So right now we're sitting on top of all the global opportunities, and as soon as they become ready for investment, then that's where the capital will go.
Are you able to talk about the countries that you're in contact with?
Well, we can't go into too much detail now about specifically where they are, because some of the negotiations are at fairly critical stages, but we can broadly say that we have about five in Latin America. We have about 3 or 4 in the MENA, Middle East, North Africa region. We have a couple further back in the pipeline in Africa, a couple of edge of Europe type countries, and obviously we have a couple of opportunities in Asia. We are sort of involved in the 100 Cities Initiative in India. So that's sort of going forward. So we're spread, you know, fairly well over most of the world. It kind of has to be that way, because what we're doing in terms of capital and risk allocation, so we're taking the initial risk up to the level of initiating the kinds of conversations with governments for these regulatory framework agreements. And we're doing that because we're enabling the partners that Eric's going to bring to the table in the land investment to, you know, lower their level of speculative risk on the project as much as we can. So the whole process here is at each level to lower the level of risk as much as is, you know, possible to do.
Now, I know you guys have been at it for a while, and I also know you don't have a crystal ball, but what do you think the time horizon is to get the first few of these up and running? Is it months, years, decades? What does that look like?
It sort of depends what you mean by up and running. So I think, you know, there are opportunities we're working on where we would expect, you know, a regulatory framework to be signed, you know, within a year, within a few months in some cases. Conversion of that into the first, you know, shovels in the ground sort of thing, that's, I think, a couple of years away for some of these projects. To actually then go from that to the realization of the economic opportunity in terms of a city takes a long time to build.
You bet.
We think there are different iterations of what the city might be, what it might be based on. But we're thinking of a 5 to 8 year cycle for this. I mean, one way to look at it in terms of investment is it's a bit like biotech. You know, you invest in a certain amount. There is a very long pipeline. There is a very long process of a high level of sunk costs. And there's a relatively low chance of the full, complete enterprise city, in our case, being built. But if it is built, then it is a blockbuster drug. Then you're talking about literally billions of dollars of economic activity generation. So, and investors look at this very much the same way that investors look at biotech, which is at the very, very beginning, you have a lot of sort of venture philanthropy, which people want it to be successful. You know, you want to contribute to find a cure for cancer. Now, if you do very well as a result, that's great. That's great. But your motivation is sort of twofold, and that's similar here. The only difference, actually, is because it's land. Mm-hmm. You've offset a lot of that initial pipeline risk for these kinds of investors.
Right, and to Eric's point, everything you're doing is probably going to long-term add some sort of value to the land, and if it doesn't, you still have a real asset. It's not like I invented in a patent or for oil that isn't there. So it's good stuff. Well, this has been fascinating. I know a lot of you folks are probably in the car or you're listening as you're exercising, which we love. In case you aren't able to get all this information, all you have to do is send an email to us at enterprise@realestateguysradio.com. We'll connect you up with more information. And again, this is a great initiative you guys have, obviously. From the investment side, you need to be accredited, and that's just the way it is with these kind of early investments. But we certainly wish you guys a lot of luck with it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. You're tuned to the Real Estate Guys radio program. More we come back. I'm your host, Robert Helms.
Hi, this is Darren Hardy, publisher of Success Magazine, and you're listening to the Real Estate Guys.
Memphis, Tennessee is a market that delivers in more ways than one. As home to FedEx, Memphis is one of the largest distribution hubs in the world. That means working class jobs. No wonder Memphis is one of the best cash flow real estate markets in America. And the guy in Memphis who can deliver great, affordable cash flow turnkey properties is Terry Kerr at Mid-South Home Buyers. Contact Terry through the resource section at realestateguysradio.com. And be sure to order Terry's tips for turnkey rental property investing. It's free. Just send your request to turnkey@realestateguysradio.com. That's turnkey@realestateguysradio.com.
Hi, this is Patrick Donahoe of Paradigm Life. Over the last few years, I've had the privilege of sharing the services of Paradigm Life with you loyal Real Estate Guys Radio listeners through our website, www.beyourbank.com, and also on the annual Investor Summit at Sea. Subsequently, we have seen a variety of financial situations across the socioeconomic spectrum and how everyone, regardless of their situation, would improve their financial lives by following the system we specialize in. As a result of this experience, we have created an online e-learning system so anyone without obligation can learn about the infinite banking concept. This free e-learning program is found on our website, www.beyourbank.com. So check it out today. The website again is www.beyourbank.com.
Hi, this is Garrett Sutton, Rich Dad's advisor. Remember, equity happens, and you're listening to The Real Estate Guys.
Welcome back to the Real Estate Guys radio program, heard every weekend on this great radio station all the time at realestateguysradio.com. We're in Las Vegas, Nevada for Freedom Fest. It's our sixth Freedom Fest in a row. It's time to meet a Real Estate Guys listener who is here for his first Freedom Fest. Welcome back to the show, Dr. Eric Tate. How are you?
I'm great. I'm doing great today.
What has this done for you? This is a big mind-expanding event. First of all, have you enjoyed Freedom Fest?
Oh, absolutely. It absolutely is a mind-expanding event. I didn't know what to expect, but it really is the largest gathering of free minds in the world.
So what were your takeaways, Eric? You went to a lot of sessions, you saw a lot of main stage, you saw the big events, you got in hallway conversations. What are some of your big takeaways?
It's interesting. There's an intellectual framework around kind of individual liberty and the individual being the agent of change. Which is very different than we sometimes hear in the political realm, where it seems like everything falls upon public policy are coming out of either Washington or the state houses or city, local cities, states, and governments. This is a flipped kind of model that says, no, the agent is actually the citizen, the individuals getting together and then creating all of those other things.
You know, interesting. Now, I would say this. Was that what you were expecting when you got here?
Yes and no. It was just a diversity of topics. Everything from metaphysics to mass incarceration to real estate investing. It was a smorgasbord.
Now, we heard from a couple of political candidates. This is not necessarily a political event, but in the years we've been coming that we've been in a race, we've been able to interview over the years presidential candidates, a couple of them this time. How was that part of the event for you?
It's actually pretty interesting because you get a much more intimate feel. They were asked not to give campaign speeches, and they pretty well stayed hewed to that line pretty well. They're oftentimes very different than they're painted in the media in terms of sound bites and blurbs, when you can actually hear them kind of express a coherent, complete thought. It's actually very refreshing.
Such a good point. Well, all we ever hear is the little sound blurbs and the little bites and a few bits here and there. And when they're unplugged, if you will, it's completely different. Now, let's talk about coming out to events, because for those of our listeners who may recognize your name, you've been on the show before to share a Halloween horror story with us, but you're a busy doctor. That's your profession. You're busy with your family life. You're a successful real estate investor and syndicator, and yet you found time in your busy schedule to come to an event like this. Talk about that part of it, because I know you specifically set out to make sure you have time in your life to get this kind of stuff on the agenda.
No, absolutely. Personal development is big on my radar screen, as you all promote. I absolutely make sure that there's time to kind of feed the mind with different ideas in different venues with people who I don't necessarily agree with 100% of the time. As Robert Kiyosaki likes to say, there's heads, there's tails, and there's the edge. And so the more ideas that you hear that may be counter to what you think you believe, just I think makes individuals a more rounded person. And so anytime I can get education, I definitely try to put it on my calendar and my schedule.
All right, good stuff. Well, thanks for your feedback, and it's been great hanging out with you.
Absolutely, as always.
Thanks for tuning into the show. We're in Las Vegas, Nevada at Freedom Fest, and my goodness, that was just a sample of some of the things that we've spent the last several days getting our minds around, but good stuff.
Yeah, it's so much fun. You know, I got to tell you, I mean, I enjoyed everybody, but I got a special kick out of Lily. And, yeah. You know, when she was part of the opening program and she was up there on stage and she was just a fireball. And, you know, one of the things that I've learned, and this is kind of how I've learned it, which is strange, but, I travel a lot. And when I travel, the first thing I do when I get in the cab is I ask people, so how's life in XYZ city? How's right. life here? And they tell me, and then almost all the time they're foreign. And so I always ask, well, what brought you to the city? Are you from here originally or where are you from? And they tell me where they're from. A lot of times it's from out of the country, you know, talk to a guy from Somalia. I've talked to people from Kenya. I've talked to people obviously from India, different places. And I'm like, well, how did you end up here? And they tell their story and they come here for opportunity. And of course, I'm on the other side because I see the United States moving in a direction that sometimes is a little bit more concerning for me, being a little bit more small government minded, right? And so I'm sitting there thinking, wow, they helped me see the United States through a more balanced point of view. There's still a ton of opportunity. It's still arguably the greatest country for entrepreneurs and investors that there is, right? Still want to have an international perspective. So I'm looking at Lily, who came over from China, just based on that. It's like, let's go recruit her for an interview. So I have a conversation with her and I find out a little bit about her background, find out that she's a real estate investor. Wow. Then I found out that she used debt. Well, I'm fascinated because I've done enough business with Chinese people. They don't like debt, right? So we have that conversation. I say, well, how did you get to this place where you think the way you did? Oh, well, I read this book called Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Well, I got to tell you, over the years, as we've become friends with Robert Kiyosaki, I almost take it personally. I mean, I feel personal when people say that their lives have been changed through Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I was walking down a street in Tijuana, Mexico a little while ago, walked by a bookstore, great big poster of Robert's latest book, Second Chance, in Spanish. I whipped out my camera. I took a picture of it. I'm thinking, how cool is it to be a guy that wrote something that is literally changing the lives of people all over the world? Imagine having that kind of profound messaging. And now she took that message, which is obviously what we try to do with our messaging, and she put it into action. And it really did change her life. I mean, she's now a full-time real estate investor. It's crazy.
Yeah, great stuff. Inspirational. And thanks to all of our guests today. Hey, it's been 3 weeks now with lots of guests. It's your turn. Next week on The Real Estate Guys, it's Ask the Guys. If you have a burning question about real estate, no matter what it might be, send it to us. All you do is go to our website at realestateguysradio.com, and you'll see up on the top it says Ask the Guys. Click that, fire away, send us your question. We'll certainly get more questions that we can answer, but we'll pick out the ones with the broadest appeal. And don't hesitate to send your question in. Find out what's on your mind so we can give you our 2 cents. Just go to realestateguysradio.com and click Ask the Guys. Hey, big thanks for Mark Skousen, the producer and founder of Freedom Fest, for always being a great host. Until next week, go out and make some equity happen.
This episode of the Real Estate Guys Radio Show is brought to you by Paradigm Life. Powerful cash management strategies using life insurance. Learn more at beyourbank.com. Mid-South Home Buyers, low-cost, turnkey cash flow properties in Memphis, Tennessee. Corporate Direct, asset protection strategies for real estate investors from attorney and rich dad advisor Garrett Sutton.
Find these and other great companies under the Resources tab at realestateguysradio.com. To learn how you can expose your product or service to the Real Estate Guys audience, call 888-489-7723, extension 4. That's 888-489-7723, extension 4. Or use the feedback page at realestateguysradio.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week right here on the Real Estate Guys Radio Show.